Meeting of the House Transportation Committee will come to order. Time is 1:33 on February 21st. Members present are Co-Chair Stutes, Representative Drummond, Representative Clayman, Representative Kopp, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Newman, and myself, Chair Wool. We do have a quorum. Please silence your cell phones. If you have any communication to make with any of the members, please do so through Laura Seidel, our committee staff. And I'd like to thank Heather Evoy and Matt Kern from the Juneau LIO and for their support as well. Our first order of business today is presentation of the committee substitute for House Bill 60, Motor Fuel Tax, by the House Transportation Committee. And this committee substitute for House Bill 60, and we're going to have Laura Seidel and Matt Gruning present the CS for this bill. First, Madam Co-Chair, may I have a motion to bring the CS before committee?
You may. Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 60, Work Draft 30-GH1794/D, as a working document.
Seeing no objection, it is so ordered. Now the documents before the committee, will Ms. Steidoff and Mr. Gruning please come to the table, present the changes from the new CS. We also have Emily Nauman with Ledge Legal on the phone to answer any questions.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Laura Steidoff, staff to the House Transportation Committee.
For the record, Matt Greening, staff to the House Transportation Committee.
Before I use the proposed work draft, committee substitute for HB 60 Transportation Version D. The co-chairs have made a few changes to the original bill that Matt Greening and I will speak to. There are some stylistic changes that Ledge Legal made by the drafter, and we will not be going over those. And there were also two minor typographical errors that Department of Law caught when the bill was first presented. And which have been cleaned up. In the title, page 1, line 2, insert establishing after fuel tax. And this was just a change that the drafter made to make it clear that the transportation maintenance fund was being established in this bill. Section 1 is new. It's legislative intent language that the co-chairs wanted to clarify that each sub-account for the Transportation Maintenance Fund, motor fuel, aviation, jet fuel, marine fuel, was used specifically for infrastructure and expenses related to each user group. Co-chairs felt it was necessary to ensure the intent of this bill is clear and that all revenue generated will be used to improve roads, highways, harbors, ports, airports, and ferries. The next five changes to sections 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11 were all made for the same purpose and use similar language to tighten appropriation language so that funds cannot be used for anything other than what they were specified for. Funds do not lapse and remain available for the next fiscal year. The co-chair's intent for this was so the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities use the funds exactly the way they said they were going to, which is to build and maintain infrastructure for each user group being taxed. Now I'm going to turn the rest over to Matt Greening.
For the record, again, Matt Greening, staff to the House Transportation Committee. On Section 12, page 6, line 26 through 27, an exemption was added for commercial fishing watercraft, and I will start this with the caveat that there was a mistake in drafting. What is titled, or what's phrased in the bill as commercial watercraft is actually supposed to be commercial fishing watercraft. And the reason that the co-chairs put this exemption in there was because the commercial the fisheries tax is going to be forthcoming next year, and commercial fishermen were a user group that we identified as kind of being double hit with the same tax, motor fuel tax, and also the incoming fisheries tax. Like I said, the use of the term commercial watercraft is an error, and we're going to bring forward an amendment to change that to commercial fishing watercraft so that barges, cruise ships are not exempted from the bill. And all this is a 3-cent rebate to the tax increase. So it's still an overall increase for them. They're at 5 cents now. They'd be doubled to 5 cents. Then with the 3-cent rebate, provided that they apply for the rebate, they would be at 7 cents. And
Go ahead, Representative Newman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Matt, I'm trying to understand this then. So this carves out a special reduction for commercial fishing watercraft?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Newman, that is correct.
So, Mr. Chair, on that, if I'm a licensed, registered sport guide who uses my boat professionally, would I qualify?
Currently, and this is through the chair, Representative Newman, currently the term commercial watercraft or commercial fishing watercraft is not defined. So part of the amendment we're going to be bringing forward is going to define exactly what that is. It's not defined in the bill right now, and it's not defined in statute. So part of what we're going to be doing with this amendment is clarifying what that actually is. As far as to what that language will be coming out, I'm not quite sure yet. But it is not currently defined in statute. I think that's an issue that you would need to speak to the co-chairs about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And continuing on, in Section 13, page 7, lines 6 through 8, is just another reference to the 3 cent per gallon rebate for what is supposed to be commercial fishing marine fuel. And then the other most substantive change that we have in the bill is on Section 19, page 8, line 16. We removed 2018 and added 2019 to the co-chairs felt that it would be good to give a year's gap in administering the tax, so it would double as planned July 1st, 2017. Then there would be a year break in 2018, and the next doubling of the tax would come in 2019. And this was just something that the co-chairs felt would provide a little bit of relief to industry, give them a year in between the increases to kind of adapt and soften the blow, so to speak. And that concludes the changes in the bill.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yep. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Matt, on this motor fuel tax that's collected, and we heard from the department that it would go back to different user groups or they could get a rebate from the state. A lot of this money, particularly in a year like right now, and people from the Matsu in particular, there's a lot of snow machining going on up there. People recreate like that. They go buy gasoline from the pump. They're paying this extra gas. Some of it's used commercially. Some of it for freight companies. Some just how does all that figure? So if the gas that tax that's collected by them, how does that money go back into trails that are used by the people who buy the gas? How do we ensure that?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, as you know, right now, in the Constitution, you can't really dedicate funds. So I know that there is no real mechanism to ensure that goes back into trails specifically. I think the idea is that it goes for kind of off-road maintenance and stuff, but there's no mechanism to ensure that happens, which was one of the reasons in the CS that we included the intent language and the tightening of the different sections to do the most that we could to suggest that those funds be used for those purposes. We did not specifically address the off-road use in those tightening of those sections.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was kind of a lead-in to my next question on the current use, the current taxes that we have also. You know, I know that the language is already in statute, I believe, for this money to go back to where it's collected from. That's the intent. Do you know, or maybe it's a question for the department, Mr. Chair, is there any money that goes back into trails that is all the gasoline that people from ATVs, snow machines buy? Do you know if any of that money goes back into trails currently? If there's any money goes into trails off of that gasoline tax?
I'll take a stab at it. Maybe someone from the department can either support or contradict me. But I think right now off-road vehicles are eligible for an exemption or for a rebate. So if you either heavy equipment or even snow machines or four-wheelers, you have to fill out the paperwork and send it in, is what I'm told. So currently under this bill and under the current tax structure for motor fuel tax, there's not any allocated for trails. I know there was a licensing fee for snow machines, and some of that fund was to be used for trails. Whether it was or not, I don't know. And I think the rumor is it wasn't all that used for the trails, but that was its sort of designated purpose. But for the purpose of motor fuel, I don't believe any is dedicated for snow machine trails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, the reason for my question is there is because we are working on a bill, and maybe we can work on something towards that direction, because that's the process that we follow, the discovery process that we are. And I understand that there's the snow track funds that come from registration of snow machines that was vetoed by Governor Walker last year of $250,000. But I believe that there's also language, and I'm just trying to get the intent to where the people who are paying these taxes in feel comfortable maybe paying these taxes in, because they know it's going back to why the taxes were originally propagated. So all the money that's the gas that's bought from snow machine trails, I believe that there's even the federal government gives the state back money. You know, we get a lot of money back from gasoline tax, from the federal taxes that are collected. If any of that goes back towards trails, that's collected on that. And that's kind of where I wanted to try to get to, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just kind of wanted to piggyback on Matt's comments with regard to state statute. I did go ahead and have Leg Legal pull up an opinion with regard to designated funds. And, you know, as much as the new committee substitute looks for ways to tighten up how these funds would be allocated, the true nature of designated funds still are not truly designated for any particular purpose. And I guess that's where my concern remains, is that, you know, who's to say the Marine Highway System couldn't pull funds over from the motor fuel or vice versa? There's still no true mechanism that will allow it to stay in any particular area and be used for that function. So I think we need to be cognizant of that.
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, you are correct that there's dedicated funds, then there's designated funds. There's no way to dedicate funds to a specific purpose. But one thing that future committees, future legislators do look at is legislative intent. And it, with the intent, with the tightening of the language, there's no true, hard, and fast way to ensure that. But you can get commitments from the department, commitments from the administration, and then as much intent that you can put into that legislation, the easier it is for future committees and future legislators to look at it and say, this is what this committee was thinking at this point in time.
Right, and I understand that. Thank you, sir.
No more further questions? Okay, we'll be accepting amendments for the CS by tomorrow at 3 o'clock, if you have any. And we'll vote on them on Thursday. Our next order of business is House Bill 131, the Federal Relocation Assistance, sponsored by this committee. House Transportation Staff Laura Steidolf will be presenting this bill, and Heather Fair, Chief of Right-of-Way for the state, will be here to answer any further questions. We do not plan on moving this bill out of committee today, but we'll hear it and hold it till a later date. You ready, Ms. Steidolf?
Yes. Good afternoon again. For the record, my name is Laura Steidolf, staff to the House Transportation Committee. Today I'm presenting House Bill 131, Federal Relocation Assistance Programs Projects. This bill will bring Alaska into compliance with federal law concerning reimbursement for relocation expenses incurred by individuals or businesses that were displaced due to federally funded highways, bridges, or facility projects. Alaskans deserve to be fairly compensated in these circumstances. HB 131 will also protect Alaska's $500+ million annual allocation of Federal Highway Administration funding by bringing the state into compliance. In 2012, Congress relaxed the eligibility criteria and increased the maximum reimbursement limits for the state's relocation assistance payment programs when they passed their Transportation Authorization and Funding Bill, the Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century Act. It's also known as MAP 21. Prior to MAP 21, the payment rates hadn't changed for over 30 years. These changes went into effect October 1st, 2014. Unfortunately, Alaska statute continues to reflect the more stringent eligibility requirements and the smaller maximum reimbursement limits. During the second half of the 29th legislature, this inconsistency between state and federal law was almost fixed. Language similar to HB 131 was proposed and passed unanimously in the House. It passed through Senate State Affairs and Senate Finance. However, the bill was held in Senate rules and never calendared for a Senate floor vote. HB 131 assures Alaskans that their legislature wants them to be compensated the same as residents of other states. Thank you for your opportunity to present this bill on behalf of the House Transportation Committee. Heather Fair, the Director of State Right-of-Way Chief, is here to answer any questions.
Sure. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What was the number of the bill that stalled?
Representative Newman, through the chair, I believe it was HB 252.
252? HB 252.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And just for the record, so we all understand, this is just for relocation. This isn't for buying property or buildings or anything like that. This is just for the relocation costs. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yes, that's correct.
So,
yep, yeah. Representative Kopp.
So through the chair, thank you for that great presentation, Laura. It's our understanding, Laura, that this money will just be benefiting Alaskans who are being relocated on a federal project at the same level other states are with federal relocation funds. It just raises our statutory authority to reimburse displaced Alaskans at the same rate they would be in other states.
Representative Kopp, through the chair, that is correct. And it's a 91% federal funding, 9% Alaska funding. But it does raise us at the same level as other
states.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Moving right along, we have another bill for introduction today, since time allows. Final order of business, House Bill 117. Art and Public Facilities Exempt State Ferries, sponsored by this committee. House Transportation Staff Matt Greening will present the bill. Another bill we do not plan on moving today. We're just holding it to hear it. We'll be hearing it today and hold it till a later date.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, again, Matt Greening, staff to the House Transportation Committee. This is the bill of which I gave an introduction to several weeks ago to basically on the 1% for art program and a specific exemption that we're looking for the two new Alaska class ferries and the replacement vessel Testamina. So for any members that were not here, basically there's a requirement that 1% of the construction costs of public facilities be used for the purchasing, administration, hanging of art. And currently right now we have a motor vessel Taku, which is an unmanned layup status. We're trying to sell it. All the art has been taken off the Taku and put in a climate controlled facility in Ketchikan. That art is available for reuse and refurbishment on the two new Alaska class ferries that are scheduled to be delivered for the Upper Lynn Canal operation in 2018. And we have art on the old motor vessel Testamina that we are going to be taking and putting on the new replacement. So basically there's a zero fiscal note attached to this bill, but you can see in the analysis section on the second page, it talks about the savings that the state will obtain by seeking this one-time exemption. I would like to add that the bill is not opposed by the State Council on the Arts, and it is not an attack on the program itself, but a one-time exemption in recognition of the state's difficulties that we're facing fiscally right now, and the fact that we have this art already in another location that we can use for refurbishment rather than, like, you know, buying new art. In light of the fact I already presented on this once, I'm going to keep it very brief. And if anybody has any questions, at the chair's pleasure, I'd be happy to answer them.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, this is just for the two new Marine Highway vessels that are coming up?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, the two new Marine Highway vessels that are being constructed right now, and then also for the replacement Testamina, which has funding in this year's budget. So it's just for those three, a specific exemption for those three.
Mr. Chair, this is my consideration, is if we might want to just move this over to everything that they're doing with the ferries instead of just these three vessels for consideration. We have the 1% for ours is going for these three vessels now, but we're going to need new vessels in the future too. And instead of going back to the legislature doing this again, or maybe we might consider just eliminating the 1% for ARC for ferries.
It's something to think about. I think one of the reasons the State Council of the Arts is approving this is that it is not an open-ended exemption, but just a one-time deal for these three ships, which is, I don't know when the next ships are in schedule for after these. Hopefully not real soon, but maybe Captain Newsel can answer to that. I think so. Matt, we have the two ships in construction and the future replacement for the Tustamina. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, it's just a one-time carve out for those three vessels for a total of, basically over $5 million in construction budget savings.
Further questions or comments? Okay. Thank you, Matt. I guess while we're at it, I could ask anyone from DOT if there are plans after these three ships, just out of curiosity, what the timeline is for that.
Good afternoon. For the record, Michael Newsel, Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. To the Chair, we do not have an exact timeline for replacement vessels. Tustamina replacement vessel is the next one on the horizon. It's been designed. As Mr. Greening mentioned, there is a funding request in this year's budget to fund that vessel's construction. Beyond that, the plan is fluid in terms of replacement vessels.
Okay. Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question, Captain Newsel. On this exemption, how much does the state actually save? Or maybe I could ask that in another respect. When you consider the cost of building the ferries and then the 1% ART, is the 1% ART on the total cost of the ferries, or is it on the state's portion of the, as opposed to the state and the federal portion of building those ferries?
Through the Chair, Representative Stutes, the way I understand the statute requiring the 1% for ART contribution, it's based on the construction cost of the facility, in this case the vessel, and marine highway vessels are specifically listed in that statute that requires that. So for the example of the Alaska class ferries, those two vessels are under a $101 million contract. 1% of that would be the requirement to set aside for ART. The numbers for the Tustamina replacement vessel is based on the cost estimate for that vessel at $237 million. So $2.37 million would be set aside for ART. That $2.37 million set aside would be a split because the plan for the Tustamina replacement vessel is to do a federally funded project, essentially 90-10 split or thereabouts depending on the federal funding level. So part of that would come from federal funds. Part would come from the state match.
Mr. Chair?
Follow up,
Representative Stutes.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Give me the split again on the TUSTI.
Through the chair, Representative Stutes. Typically, federal aid projects typically federal aid projects are 90% federally funded, 10% state match, and that varies slightly on different programs. I don't know exactly what it will be for the Tustamina, but approximately 90% federal, 10% state.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just want to get this clear in my mind. So what we would be saving would be we would save 1% of the 10% on the TUSTI.
Through the chair, to Representative Stutes, for state funds specifically, yes. Okay. That is correct.
Great. Thank you.
So I guess to follow up on her question, of the 1% for ART the 1% for ART, the federal funds could be used for that. Whatever federal funds are being used for the 90%, then they would pay the 90% of the 1%.
To the chair, if I understand your question correctly, the 1% for ART set aside would be split along the same lines as the project. So 90% of that would come from federal funds.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much. Representative Sullivan-Leonard.
Thanks. I was just looking through the packet, Mr. Chairman, and actually Representative Stutes had provided us with a
Q&A piece that actually goes into detail about how much the state would save, and it says it avoids spending nearly $3.5 million from the construction budget on that particular art. So that might answer the question.
Yes, I think the 2.37 from the Tustamina would be apparently 90% paid by the federal match, so the state obligation would be more, would be
right.
One-tenth of that.
Right, and they lined it out here in detail.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Representative Clayman.
Is there a companion federal 1% for art match that's required?
Through the chair, Representative Clayman, not to my knowledge.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, just I think through the discussion here, I think clarification from the sponsor statement, the two Alaska Marine Highway vessels, the Alaska class ferries are 100% state funding.
Correct.
On that, and then only the Tustamina replacements, you only get the 90% funding for it.
Through the chair, Representative, that is a correct observation. The Alaska class ferries are 100% state funded. I would add to that that the 1% for art set aside is not really a cost savings. We don't pocket or bank that money back into the general fund. Those vessels are actually have a lot of items that were listed as state furnished equipment on them. In order to stay within the funding available to award that contract, many critical pieces of equipment on the vessel were listed as state-funded. So the state would have to come up with that equipment either by other funding sources or by taking it, salvaging it off a vessel that was leaving service if it was capable of doing that in order to fully outfit the Alaska-class ferry. So this money, instead of going 1% for art, would actually go 1% for things like radars and rigid hull inflatable boats and things that the vessel actually needs to be outfitted with.
So if I may follow up. Some of those items aren't included in the price when you list it. They're sort of add-ons that are state-funded. Is that correct?
To the chair, that is correct. When the construction contract was awarded, negotiated at the $101 million, there were many items listed, and I could provide a list if necessary, of items that were supposed to be state-furnished equipment provided outside of that contract to outfit the vessels.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, if we could have that list, that'd be great.
I'll provide that.
So the 100 and whatever million, 101.5 million, that's the 1% obligation. And then the other, I mean, that's the amount that we're, the state 1% fund is matched from. And then the other items are extras or
Through the chair, interesting observation. The construction cost of the vessels, as awarded to Vigor Shipyard in Ketchikan, was $101 million. The statute requires the 1% on top of that. So for the other items that were not funded through that construction contract, the boats, the radar, some of the HVAC equipment that I mentioned, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, that is not in the construction contract, so technically not under the 1% for art funding requirement, although it would still be part of the construction cost of those vessels overall.
Thanks. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it sounds a little bit like we're talking about movable items like furniture that's usually not part of the construction cost, say, of a building. I just have a question in talking about the history of this. Why were the Alaska-class ferries totally state-funded, and why did we not ask for the federal share?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, there's a long history on that. I think if you essentially boil it down, it was a desire to control where the construction of those vessels was to be conducted and to be able to steer that to Ketchikan with a federally aided project. We could not steer that directly to Ketchikan. We did an innovative procurement for the Alaska class ferries, a construction manager, general contractor, CMGC process, where we actually competed for a shipyard to be that construction manager, general contractor, and then negotiated a best price with that firm directly rather than bidding it out like you would normally bid out a project.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any more questions or comments? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Captain Newsom. So we're not going to move any of the two bills we just heard, and we'll do the CS for HB 60 on Thursday, amendments tomorrow at 3 o'clock, And if there's no more further questions from the committee, we will adjourn at 2:04.